least and, and best.
Oh. What is treatment all about? What is treatment all about? Is treatment about making something happen, or is treatment about recognizing something that already exists?
All right.
Now, if you say, so you'd like a new house, I see it done. Whatever is for your highest and your best is already done. You already have that ideal house. You have that 50-room mansion, you know, with that giant swimming pool and this 60 acres around it, you know, in the middle of downtown Beverly Hills, you know. And you have that garage filled with beautiful cars, you know, and you have many friends who are visiting you all the time, party time all the time. And you're complaining? What are you complaining about?
Well, how am I going to pay for it?
What do you mean, pay for it? You own the house. Everything is all paid for. Well, you got to buy the food for the party. Well, don't give parties if you can't buy the food, you know. Is that what you're thinking? No. If you're thinking you have that house, then you are thinking, how did you get that house? And what did you have placed in your consciousness to bring that house about? How did you manifest that house? How did you treat for that house and get that house? Now, are you a half-assed treater? Are you the kind of treater who just treats for a house and you have this beautiful house and you can't afford to keep it up, so you have to sell it? Is that what you do? I mean, that's foolish, isn't it? You want to treat knowing that you have the house and you have the wherewithal to take care of it any way you want. You have all of the accoutrements that go along with the house to make it a beautiful place. Now, Herb, that's talking kind of the will-o'-the-wisp, kind of dreamy-like. No, it isn't. Ellen, you have a sick body. And you come to me and you say, Herb, I have a sick body. And I say, that's nice. And you say, don't be so stupid, you know. I said, no, that's nice. You have what you say you have. Now, well, how do I say I have a whole and perfect body? Well, you say, I have a whole and perfect body. Now, your problem is not that you have a whole and perfect body or don't have a whole and perfect body. Your problem is you don't know what you want. If you know what you want, you will say, I have a perfect body, and you'll act like you have a perfect body. You'll think like you have a perfect body. You'll be like you have a perfect body. You'll live a perfect body, and that perfect body that perfect body is yours now, and it is going to be always yours. It is yours because you live in that perfect consciousness of the perfect body and all that it entails.
That is all clear. But take that example with Annemarie's friend, where you said, whatever is for the highest and best is manifested. Now, if I say to Annemarie, it's done.
Ellen? Annemarie was lying to you. She didn't want that man in her world. She didn't want that relationship in her world. She wanted the memory in her world of what it was when it was long ago when she had that beautiful relationship with the man, okay? She wanted that memory in her world. Now, I know that, and you know that. Now, she doesn't want that man in her world right now. She doesn't even know him. He lives in a different state, in a different nation. She hasn't seen him for years, but she has a memory in her mind of what she wants, and which is fine. We all live in our memory programs a great deal. Now, if I said to her, whatever is for your highest and best, you see, then the responsibility is up to her to have the highest and best. Now, does she really want that man with all of his limitations, that he only comes and visits her once every 2 or 3 years? Is that what she wants? Does she only want that man to come and be nice to her when he has nothing else to do? Is that what she wants? You see, now, what is it that she wants? Now, is this the ground, the foundation, the way of thinking about the relationship and whatever is for her highest and best? Now, she may not know what is for her highest and best. We oftentimes don't.
Right.
And so, what we do is we say, whatever is for my highest and best. Now, do you want to live in your highest and best?
Yes.
If you want to live in your highest and best, you'll never tell me you have a headache. You'll never tell me you have a lack of something, or that you have too much of something, or anything. You will never say anything that's going to be contrary to what your conscious thought is of your highest and best. Mm-hmm. You see? Now, people say, well, I don't want you to die, but if it's for your highest and best to die, go ahead and die, you know. Well, that's not our authority.
Uh-uh.
We want them to do what is for their highest and best. My highest and best is for having you living. My highest and best is for having you be around me. Mommy, I miss you if you want to die, you know. She said, well, I feel like going. I said, well, do whatever you want to do, but I'll still miss you. You know, and I don't have to miss her, because she's always in my heart.
Mm.
But the thing, I wanted to manipulate my mother and keep her alive. I wanted to manipulate her life and tell her she has no right to die and she has no right to do anything she wants to do. Well, in my world, she doesn't. In my world, she only has the right to live. But, you see, what kind of a living do I create her living? Do I spend every moment of my life with her? Joke. Do I spend one day out of a week with her? Joke. Do I spend a couple days of a year with her?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know. Now, is that the kind of relationship I want with Mom? Yeah. I don't want a moment-by-moment relationship. I got other things to do, you know. I don't want her hanging on my tail. But the thing is, the way we say it, we take away other people's existence. Now, I'm not saying mothers should live or die. I am saying, what is my choice? What is my expectation? You come to me and you say, Herb, I want to live. And I say, great. So, I treat that you live. I see that you live. Now, did you say you want to live the same life you've been living? Did you say you want to live with the same person you've been living? Do you say you want to live in the same abundance or lack of abundance that you've been living? You follow me? See, now, what is it that's your highest and best in your mind, in your thinking? And in your thinking is a bunch of rotten things for your highest and best. You think you got to struggle for the money, you got to struggle for the relationship, you got to struggle to keep your friends happy around you because you like to do things that they don't like to do. And hey, time for a change, isn't it? Time for looking at life from a new point of view. But when people come to us for treatment, we right away think that they want what they ask for. And they don't.
That's the point. That's my
question. No, that's not your question. And if it were your question, you would have asked it. Now, do they want what they want? No. They want what is in their mind. They want the memory. Like Anna, she wants the memory of that relationship, which was very nice, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. But she doesn't really want what she's thinking she's asking for. Now, if Anna Marie wanted a perfect relationship, what would she do? I live in a perfect relationship with everybody I have. I treat my sons with the greatest respect. I encourage my sons to be themselves and to walk their own path and to be... I give them values, so I have nothing to worry about. They have my values. My values are good. My sons have good values. My daughter, she has good values because I have good values. And I give her my values. Now, is there anything to worry about there?
Mm.
Oh, I hope my daughter will always be good. I hope... Well, did you train her to be good? Did you give her values? Did you give her your understanding of what you think are good ways of looking at life? You know? Okay, now. Everything we get in life and everything we have in life is a reflection of who we are and what we believe about ourselves. And if we believe about ourselves that we are miserable people, not worthy of it, then that's what we'll get. Mm-hmm. Some people come up to me and say, well, Herb, everybody's picking on me, everybody's doing this. I said, good for them. They know that you're a nothing, that you're a tweak, you know. They know you're a nothing. I just made the word up. Now, they know you're a tweak. They know you're an absolute worthless nothing being, you know. And you confirm that. You know, why isn't anybody like me? You go around like a milk toast, you know. And you come to me, and you look at me and you say, Herb, I feel wonderful. I say, great. Herb, I'm the Queen of England. Now, how could I be the best Queen of England that ever lived? And I'd say, well, Your Majesty, see, even Her Majesty asked me questions. Well, Your Majesty, you can be the best Queen of England by being the best person that you're able to be. Who are you as a person? Who are you as an individual? Who are you as a person with charisma, with magic, with charm, with every day you act the same, and you act the same to your children as you do to your people. You act the same in your office as you do to your secretaries, and you do it. You don't say that person's down and that person's up. Every one of these people is your creation. And so every one of these people must be what you feel is the best creation you can have. Now, can you afford, Queenie, can you afford to have an undersecretary and an undersecretary to the undersecretary and an undersecretary to the undersecretary to the undersecretary? You can't afford that, because that's you. Every single one of your people represent you, because you're creating them to do that. They represent you in Your Majesty. This is my representative. This is my emissary. This is me. This person represents the finest, bestest, and allest of me. Now, you see, do you think the Queen could do that? She can, but does she? No, because she's been trained that these are lower-level people who do lower-level things. Do you think, Ellen, do you think that it is more important for the Queen to put on an ironed dress or an ironed slip? Ellen, there is no difference. There is no difference. That slip has to be perfect. That has to be ironed beautifully. So the Queen puts that slip on and says, well, gorgeous. Then she covers it with her dress. Gorgeous. Each step, each piece is wonderful, magnificent, and total in itself, you see?
Yeah.
And if you say, that's the undersweater, that's the underslip, that's the underpants, that's the, well, well, let's get down to her body. Here's this naked Queen, you know? And do you think that she thinks her body is not good? Do you think that she thinks her body is not the most wonderful body that a human being could ever have? She admires her body. She washes it very, and she puts special soaps and perfumes on it, you know. And she combs her hair just as though, you know, it's going out of style. And then every piece of clothing she puts on there is something to enhance her body, to enhance her queenliness, you know. Nothing is lesser nor more. All is part of the game that she has. If she goes swimming, does she wear all her dresses? No, she wears her swimming suit, you know. And if she's going water skiing, what's she going to do? She's going to be out there water skiing. And if she's going to go skydiving, what's she going to do? She's going to go skydiving. I mean, and whatever it takes, whatever things it has, but is any one of those things more important or less important than the other? In the last holiday, remember, she was going to jump off of this dam, and she looked down and she said, oh my. You say people have been killed doing this. Yes, but only if they didn't follow directions. And he said, now you follow directions. And are you ready? One, two, no, just a minute. You know, you thought she was going to first chicken out, you know. And then she said, now I'm ready. Okay, one, two, three. And then she jumped. And the thrill of the jump was just over. You weren't feeling, you weren't shocked by it, because you were prepared. You were prepared for her going into that, and you were prepared for it being absolutely magnificent. And of course, her landing was a little jumpy. It was good even at that. But the thing is, she did it. She did it, and she didn't think of it as maybe someday, like Cragen did, you know. He chickened out because he thought she was going to chicken out, and then he, of course, wouldn't do it either. You know? But she didn't chicken out. But the thing is, she just did it.
Yeah.
Now, if she were to say, oh, my ripcord is gone, people say, well, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yes. I think of the their thoughts of these two at the moment it was to decide to jump. Could it influence the other, or has each
one? Oh, Ingeborg, it very much influences the other. It very much influences whatever the other is going to do. It very much influences if they're nothing. If each is an insignificant nothing. But she was doing this for herself. He wanted to join her. She was not doing this to impress him or anybody else.
Right.
She was doing this because she thought it would be fun.
Well, yes. Well, and he was a big mouth in everything, but only big mouth.
Yeah. But you see,
and she couldn't. He could not influence her in the slightest.
No.
In under any circumstances.
Yeah, no.
Because wherever
he was, the master.
She was the master.
She was
herself. I think better. She was herself, not she was a master. Yeah. You see, it's true she was a master. But to say she was a master sounds interesting. But to say she was herself, she was untouched by the world around her.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you playing jokes with me, God?
Yeah, in the casino.
Yeah.
Put out the same number.
But the thing is, she was untouched by anybody
else. In the casino, everybody, you
can't do that.
It's a lot of money. You can't put
it. And again, the same number. Yeah.
That's why it's not called crocheting.
That's called gambling.
It's called gambling.
But you see, she was living in the now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did she always live in the now? Nearly not, yeah.
No.
She got to the point where she said, I'm going to die in 3 weeks. I'm going to live. And I'm going to live in the now.
I've got to live.
Yeah. And I'm not going to die before that. Because that's the time that I'm supposed to have, 3 weeks, you know. So I'm not going to die before that. And so she lived, not dangerously, but she lived excited.
Adventurously.
With imagination and adventure. But you see, that really is a good illustration of treatment. She said, I'm doing it. Now, not once, unfortunately, did she say, I'm home perfect. If she had somehow gotten that treatment into herself, that I'm home perfect, then perhaps it would have been revealed sooner that she wasn't ill. But
for the sake of the story, it was okay.
But the point of the story too was that everywhere along the way, she was getting the most out of life.
Mm-hmm.
When she wrestled with her sheets.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to take my sheets for a trip around the block.
But then her focus was not on dying. Her focus was
really on being fine.
And that's why actually she did not die.
And
you could
what was,
she
what,
didn't feel sorry for herself anymore. Then.
Yeah.
What was she doing in the spa? She was having her body treated.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She was having her body loved.
Yes.
But she was just so, so right.
Yeah.
But you see, now there, it would be a good movie to show everybody about treatment. There is how treatment works. Whatever she thought about, she did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, She should not have gone down those hills. She should not have gone down the steepest one.
Oh, she just went.
She just went. Oh, golly.
The thing is, when she was there, she says, how do you turn these things? And of course, it's true. But you see, that's when I went for my ski lessons, that's what they did to me. I fell off the ski ramp, off the ski lift. Yeah. But I was okay, you know. But they didn't teach me anything. They didn't teach me anything. Schlussing and turning and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they didn't teach her either. So she went right down that hill, and she did her best. And he said, lean. And so she was leaning. And she didn't realize that the leaning was turning, but it was good. Now, treatment is where we speak our word for the joy that we are. Now, I'm whole and perfect. Now, do you believe that? If you don't believe it, then it's foolish for you to say it. Because you're lying to yourself, and yourself is saying you're lying to yourself, you see?
Yeah.
And is that what you want to say? You don't want to say that. You want to say, I'm whole and perfect, and mean it, and enjoy your body, and enjoy yourself, and lift up your chest, and stick up your chin, and say, wow, yes, it's great. I walk up here in the morning. Well, sometimes, you know, feel like, should I drive up or walk up or whatever, you know, after the rain? But and I'm walking up, and, well, you know, go back and take another nap. You know, no, I feel good, and I feel wonderful. I'm whole and perfect. I'm this and that and the other thing, you know. And by the time I get to the house here, I'm feeling wonderful. I'm feeling, what is that Ellen doing? How did I create her to do that? Ellen is just not really paying attention to anything. Ellen is being a very poor mother. Ellen is being a very poor partner on these things. Ellen is just, I don't know what's wrong with Ellen. And I'm walking down the step thinking those thoughts. And then I think, oh, what the hell. So I tell Ellen and everybody in the monastery, please do not let the dog in until I get there. I want to go in the door first, and then the dog comes in. The dog does not enter the house before I do. Caesar Milano said so, you know. He said, your dog has to know who is in charge and who's in control.
Right.
And so you enter the door first, and then the dog goes in. You leave the door first, and then the dog comes out. The dog comes behind you. He is not your master. He's not in charge. And Ellen lets the dog in. Ingeborg used to let the dog in, but she's learned not to do that. Sylvia, I haven't seen her open the door for the dog, but that's good.
No, I'm not standing in line.
She's not standing in line, but
I'm standing not in line with her. It was just at the door.
But then I instantly say to myself, well, Rex is getting a lesson. He's getting a lesson. Now, is he going to realize that he should wait outside for me? And so the minute I come to the door, he comes running outside to stand behind me, to come in behind me.
Cool.
Now, you see, those are the thoughts you want to have. Now, oh, Herb, you did that? Well, I don't know who else did it.
Mm.
You know, I was thinking, I was coming down and said, Ellen should not open the door for him. That's not her responsibility. And Rex shouldn't ask her. Rex is going to try to get away with what he can once in a while, but he shouldn't ask her. And my treatment was, all is in divine order, you know. And so I came down here. Ellen opened the door again, and Rex came bounding out, and happy to see me. We'd just seen each other 2 seconds before. And then he waited, and he came in after me. Now, this is what we want to do. We want to be master of our world, in charge of our world, and we want to see our world as done right. I saw him always coming in after me. And you want to create your world with everything in the direction that you want. Now, okay, you want this beautiful big house. And you treat for this beautiful big house. And you get this beautiful big house. And it's in a very ritzy neighborhood. High tax bracket neighborhood, you know. And so you think to yourself, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to pay so much for servants, and I'm going to have to pay so much for pool keepers, and I'm going to have to, you know, you don't do that. You don't do that. when you are ready to have a big house in a big neighborhood with big cost maintenance, you are also going to think nothing of it. Now, do you think Bill Gates is concerned about what his people do who work on his yard? Mm-mm. Yes, he does. Do you think Bill Gates thinks about what people are doing in his house, how the servants are working in his house? Do you think Bill Gates is concerned? Bill Gates says this to himself: I only hire the best people in the country to work for my company, to work for me, to work for my home. Any person who does not work according to the highest schedule of the Bill Gates philosophy in the Bill Gates home is not there. It's not there. So, but he doesn't say that. He said, everyone working in the Bill Gates home works under the Bill Gates philosophy, okay? And he has that. Now, wherever he looks, he sees it done. He sees the house maintained according to the way he wants it. He doesn't worry about it. He doesn't tell them what to do. They have staff who tell people what to do, because that's none of... He may say, bring that chair over here. You know, but other than that, he's not concerned. Or he might say, you know, I was just thinking, it'd be nicer out here if we had a nice table right in the middle here and nice lawn chairs. And I saw some that I liked in a magazine the other day. They're really great, you know. So then the next day, the table is there, the chairs are there, you know. He didn't say, get them. He just said, I'd like them. And they're what he wants. So he visualized them there. And he didn't tell them about something he didn't want to be there. He told them only about the things that he visualized there. They were already there in his consciousness. Now, it's a very subtle thing. It's a very subtle relationship to reality and dreams, you know. And if you can understand it and play with it properly, it can be the most fun thing in the world for you, because you'll see it done. And you'll see it fulfilled. Now, Bill Gates doesn't worry about his house. Bill Gates doesn't worry about his office. Bill Gates doesn't worry about his wife or his children or the school district or whatever other things that he's concerned with. He just says, let it be. And it is. And of course, he's got the money to let it be and have it is. But you do too. But you think you don't. So therefore, you don't act like Bill Gates. Now, if you took Bill Gates' money away from him, gone like that, and you didn't tell him, would he act as though the money were still there? Yeah.
Of course.
And would people respond to him according to that money's still there?
Sure.
When would the money not be available to him anymore? The minute he felt it wasn't there anymore. The minute he felt it wasn't there. And his consciousness is a neat consciousness to have, because he doesn't know how he made all that money. It just founded upon itself. It just grew upon itself, because it's just like a reinvestment. You know, you keep returning your money to your investment field, and pretty soon it grows and grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And it's outrageous, but beautiful. But that's how we want to do. That's how treatment wants to work. Now, we ask people, our organization ministers, to have a treatment list, and have a list of people that have treatment requests. Now, a treatment request is, I want you to see me the way I see me. Understand? I want you to see me the way I see me as wealthy. Okay. No problem for me. I see me as healthy. Okay, no problem for me. You might stand up a little straighter, though. It might help me to have that vision a little clearer about you being healthy if you stand up straight and get your chin up there a little bit. I see me being surrounded by friends. Well, I'm surrounded by friends all the time. And you want to see yourself surrounded by friends? Okay, I see you surrounded by friends. That's no problem. That's not hard. But You do not dare for one second not to see yourself surrounded by friends. You do not dare for one second to see yourself ill. Because the minute you see yourself ill, you have changed the treatment. You've changed the treatment. I have changed treatment. Because I don't care whether you're well or whether you're happy or sick or whatever you are. I just see everything as it is. I see that big cloud up there, and I see no cloud. The same as seeing a cloud or no cloud, it's all the same. It makes no difference whether the cloud's up there or whether it's not up there. It makes no difference whether I'm walking through the desert or walking through Palm Springs. It makes no difference. It makes no difference of anything. I just enjoy everything. Now, if you say you're walking through Palm Springs and you're really walking through the desert, I say, okay, interesting. Then I say to you, Palm Springs is a suburb of New York. And you say, oh, come on now. Palm Springs is no suburb of New York. Palm Springs is out in the middle of the desert in California. New York's in New York. No, Palm Springs is a suburb of New York. Can you visualize that? Can you conceive of that? Can you believe that? If you can click, believe that, you can do anything. But because you can't, because the logic of it will not let you do it, because the statistics, the statement, the fact that Palm Springs is not there will not let you do it. But you go to your kid and you say, kid, Palm Springs is right next to New York. And your kid will say, oh, hey, cool. So he goes to the map. He goes to the atlas. He takes his scissors and he cuts out Palm Springs and he moves it over next to New York and pastes it in next to New York. And you say, well, how about that? Now, is Palm Springs next to New York? In that atlas, can it be anywhere else next to New York also? In your consciousness, whatever you want. Herb, that's this irrational talk. Yes, that's right. But God is neither rational, reasonable,
logical
in any way, and we are trying to make it logical. You heard of the tectonic plates moving the surface of the earth around in the millenniums now and then. You've heard of that, and you haven't thought a thing about it. That's interesting. And you've heard about Atlantis and Mu. And you say, well, they're fictitious places, but they could have been, you know. And you hear of Saturn and, well, you heard, what's the tiniest planet that exists? What's the tiniest planet that exists in the Earth's galaxy? Come on, quickly. Neptune, Pluto,
Venus.
Uranus?
I would say Venus.
Huh?
Venus,
yeah.
Tiniest?
Yeah,
it's the biggest.
Oh my God, yes, Venus is a big, big planet.
Then it's Pluto.
Well, that was yesterday.
It's not anymore.
That was yesterday. They have decided to make it as a sub-planet, not a planet.
Okay.
It's no longer a planet. Now, yesterday it was a planet. In my school books, it was a planet. In your school books, it was a planet. But just a matter of a year or so ago, they decided that it does not fall in the category of what a planet is. It's a sub-planet. Now, but Pluto was a planet. It was always a planet. And this is the way we look at things. We can name it and claim it anything we want. Now, could Pluto become a planet again?
Sure. Yes.
Just as easy as it could become not a planet, you know. Why? You changed the definition. Has Pluto changed?
No.
It's still the same thing it always was. Who's changed it? You! You are so magnificent, so godly, so creatively, you can take the universe and change it just by rewording it.
Mm.
You know? magnificent. And we think we don't have power in our thought. Now, are you rich?
Yes.
Are you healthy?
Yes.
Are you happy? Is everything in divine order?
Yes.
Fantastic. Now, even whatever is out of order is in divine order. And I want you to remember that too. Because chaos doesn't just mean confusion. Chaos means the absolute confusion, which is order.
Mm-hmm.
Because we cannot understand chaos because it is so
chaotic.
so chaotic. Yeah, that's a good word for it. It's so chaotic. It's
illogical.
Yeah, that's right. It's so illogical. It does not go according to any pattern.
It does not fit into patterns.
But when we see it from the greater point of view,
then
the pattern is there.
Then it fits, yeah.
Just like we can see in the cosmic action of the of all of the planets and all of the activities going on, the galaxies, what have you, and we think that there's no pattern.
Yeah.
And these things just racing past each other. Why do they bump into each other? You know, I mean, with all the things going through, well, if you're in the middle of the desert, and you're driving your car through the desert, and there's another car in the desert, what is the possibility of the two running into each other? In the whole desert of hundreds of square miles of land, well, from your logic point of view, it would be rather seldom that that would happen. But from the realistic point of view, matter attracts matter. Like attracts matter. Like, and these things create the oneness, but why don't they bump into each other all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're just further away, and perhaps in the scheme of things, it is programmed to happen in the next 3 or 4 million years, or something of that nature, and that's beyond the scope of our thinking about it. Now, if we want to have treatments, and treatments are good, then have a treatment for whatever it is that you delight in. Now, Bill Gates said, I have a wife, and I have children, and I have lots of money. And quite likely he'll have money all his life. Now, Bill Gates says, I have children. My children are 8 years old or 12 years old, whatever their ages are. But that's a lie. Because that is only in this moment that they're 12. In another moment, they're going to be 13. Their birthday is tomorrow. Now, what's going to happen? What's going to happen as these children change and do different things? What's going to happen when his daughter, who takes on the genius of her mother and father both, and goes off to create some fabulous, wonderful thing, you know, not using any of the family money, but just using her own genius as an artist, let's say, and she's painting a picture, she's painting something glorious, and it becomes the Michelangelo, Mona Lisa, or whatever, you know, something so stupendous that of itself, money did not make it happen. And parental, whatever, didn't make it happen. It was this magnificent combination of genius within that child that made it happen. So we can never limit or delimit anything. All we can do is delight in it. And we delight in it when we find whatever it is that is exciting to us and walk with it in the realization that it's happening right now. That it is an existence for us right now. And that's what each one of you are. Each one of you are a magical trip. You're a magical journey. Your parents could never have dreamed that you would be doing the things you're doing now. Your parents could never have dreamed that you would be expressing yourself and be such a noble, quality, outstanding person that you are right now. Your parents could never have dreamed it, nor could your friends or relatives or various other people. But they knew when they met you as a parent or as a friend, they knew when they met you that there was something special about you. They knew there was something special about you. Why? Because you felt something special about you. You didn't feel you were just another ordinary being. You felt you were a very special being and very wonderful. And this is what treatment is. Treatment is a revelation of the realization of who we are, that we are very special, wonderful beings. And treatment is revealing that in every moment of our life, in every attitude we have, in every dream we do. Treatment is making, not making something happen, but it's that we recognize that we already are that which we are. We already are the fulfillment. We already are Pluto renamed, you know, or we already are all of these grand and glorious things. In the Popular Science magazine, I believe it is, they had a series of pictures, and whatever magazine it was, and in the series of pictures, it showed Mars as a inhospitable planet, and how we were moving living sites to Mars, and how at one period of time this is here, another period of time this is here, and it showed it over the periods of thousands of years on which Mars was developed as a planet with Earth possibilities to it. And then it showed it at quite a distant time, and it showed trees growing and showed all sorts of lovely things. But it also showed that everyone had to wear a costume, or they had to wear a space suit type of thing, and they all had to breathe with special breathers, because the atmosphere was so heavy that if they didn't have the space suit on, it would crush them, because it was such a dense atmosphere. And naturally, the atmosphere was not breathable of itself, and they had to take their own breathable atmosphere with them. So here they had this wonderful developed planet, most magnificent in every way, most Earth-like in every way, except no one could live on it without having protection from the planet itself and where it stood. Now, I find that just fantastic. I find that just delightful. Why does anyone ever want to create an environment that is inhospitable to humanity? I would say, if the scientists are going to do this, put on your thinking cap. Now, Mars has a pressure on the planet which is inhospitable to humanity, then how can we make man untouched by the pressure? Mm. How can we so create man so he can swim underwater without breathing apparatuses, which we can do? So we create man living on this planet, just naked as a jaybird, not needing any space suit or any breathing apparatus, just one with the nature of the planet, and being perfectly comfortable with it. How can we do that? We can do that by mentally thinking, how can we do that? And then we do it. Then we do it.
But wouldn't it be thinking it and knowing it's done?
That's what I said.
Yeah, but...
how do we do it?
Yeah, thinking and it's done.
We conceive it into being. Now, how do you take a man and put him under the water and have him swim underwater without a breathing apparatus? You give him gills, you know? Now, we don't find that intolerable. It is something that we can conceive man or animals or things have done as they came out of the water onto land. But how do we do that? How would we treat with knowing that on Mars, Mars can sustain life? Well, what would Superman do? Superman as a comic strip, you know, unlimited by logic, Superman would say, okay, let's see. In the galaxy of Milky Way, there are millions, billions of Earth-type atmospheres on planets. We'll just choose a planet that has an Earth-type atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. They are.
And then that's where we will have it. But that's such a long distance away. Well, then we will also create the ability to travel by mind, where instantly you're on this galaxy, you're on this galaxy, you're on this galaxy, Earth, 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 whatever it may be, and instantly you're there. So now train ourselves to use this mental capacity that we have of instantly placing ourselves on. And then if we're placing ourselves there, why do we want to place ourselves there in the first place? But if we're placing ourselves there, what are we going to do there? Are we going to develop a civilization there? Or are we going to have a civilization where we are here? Are we going to train ourselves?
It's so creative, so busy.
Are we going to train ourselves on this civilization of Earth where we have we have so much area that we want to develop? We have large areas that we can still develop. But do we want to do that? Do we want to keep some of it? Do we want to have the Earth overpopulated? Well, who's to say what's overpopulated? Or do we want to keep the population of the Earth at a given figure, which is something that we can conceive of maintaining and handling and developing and using all of our natural resources and so forth and doing it? And, well, then do it. Do it. Now, the Chinese, you thought, were terrible because they required no more than 2 children in a family and many other. And that's not so strange. Why not do that? Have so many children. The animal world handles that quite nicely. But the thing is, we can do these things by our thought. We can do these things by our mind. And we can do these things now. But the big thing about treatment's neither logical nor reasonable. Treatment is merely a statement of fact. I am happy. I am sad. It has nothing to do with anything else. And when you say I am happy, then be happy. When you say you're sad, then be sad. But why would anyone want to say they were sad? Or anything else? Treatment is that which is already done. That which is already accomplished. There's nothing created, nothing destroyed in this universe. There's nothing new. Everything is merely a revelation of that which already exists. So let our treatment be a revelation of that which already exists. We know that we know that which already exists. It's not that we wish we knew, but we know. So we might consider that as a way of looking at treatment. Have a lovely looking at treatment. I love you. I love you. I love you.